Hello, you're listening to Just Screen It, Case Studies in Creative Distribution. I'm your host, Colin Stryker, and I am not an expert in indie film distribution. I am an independent filmmaker working towards making my first narrative feature, a horror film entitled The Grove. As I've been contemplating my own eventual distribution strategy, I've come to the conclusion that we need more data, more transparency, more information about how the various distribution options that are out there have worked for people. So I decided to start this podcast to help capture some of the experiences of those who have already been through it, whether successful or otherwise, and from those experiences, help both listeners and myself better understand this really complex, crazy landscape of independent film distribution today. So each week, I'll be bringing on a filmmaker who has self-distributed or been personally involved in the distribution of their film. My hope is that future filmmakers can take the knowledge gleaned from the show and use it to make their own decisions on how to best distribute their films. All right, hey everybody. My guest today is Samuel Calvin Morrison, an independent filmmaker based in Philly, talking about his distribution experiences with his first self-driven feature film, By Deception, and how that informed his later experiences. Sam takes us through the story of making and releasing the film, including some less than optimal experience with a, dare I say it, predatory distributor. But ultimately, Sam was able to turn all that into a valuable learning experience, which he took into making his next projects after that. Sam talks with lots of honesty and transparency here, delivering a story that serves as both a cautionary tale and a demonstration of carrying difficult experiences forward with positivity and a spirit of learning, so important for independent filmmakers working towards the long term today. There's a lot to glean here for filmmakers facing their own distribution decision. You'll want to give this one a good close listen. I'll get right out of your way here and bring you my chat with Samuel Calvin Morrison. All right, Sam, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Hey, thanks for having me, Colin.
Sure, my pleasure.
No complaints.
Yeah, so how'd you get started with filmmaking? Just kind of let us know your origin story, your background, and then we'll get into your distribution experiences after that.
The origin story is kind of funny, just because, you know, being married now, it may sound like a villain origin, but originally I went on a college trip some years ago, and I used to write poetry initially. And, you know, like my sponsor, whoever was supposed to show me around college, he left me in a room by myself. Some girl walked in and she said, "Oh, hey, what are you doing?" I said, "Hey, I'm writing poetry." She asked to read it. She read it and she's like, "Oh, wow, this is really good. It plays out like a movie." And then it clicked like, "Oh, so, you know, making movies is how to get women."
And okay.
Switched my focus from
all right,
poems to scripts and everything like that. But from nice. There, I jumped in. I wrote for the Source magazine. Then I was a writer, producer for Entertainment News Show for AOL HuffPost. But narrative, like telling stories, was really my thing. So it was one of those things, you know, to just jump into the world and I'll take a crack at it myself. Did some shorts, built up that type of rapport to actually figure out what I was doing.
Yeah,
in the world of filmmaking, because I tell you, the first short that I had the opportunity to direct that I also wrote, I was lost.
Yeah, you're not alone.
I'm glad I, you know, sort of found my way to where I'm at now.
Yeah, it's definitely hard. It's not something you can just kind of jump into and do perfectly or even well the first time around. And yeah, I definitely, you know, I always encourage filmmakers to get some practice under their belt, do some shorts before they jump into making a feature film or anything of that scale, because there's so much to learn and so much to kind of figure out about your style, your own voice, and just how to get things done that I think the more kind of practice, more kind of low stakes practice you can get, the better with all that.
Definitely.
Sounds like you went about it that way. So I watched By Deception the other day. Great job with that. Was that the first feature film that you've made or been involved in?
So that was the first feature where I had creative control, like top to bottom. I was involved with features previously, whether it's, you know, producing on the back end or writing a script. But that was, you know, the first, hey, the buck stops with me.
So you were sort of the driver of that project.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But you didn't direct it, right? I think it looks like you had somebody else direct it. You produced it. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we shot a bulk of it in my house.
Uh-huh.
You know, like I said, I'm married. I have twin boys. And it was one of those situations, like, if we're going to be in a house and I'm not going to be able to stop to be dead, you know, so I figured the best thing to do, have somebody else, you know, direct it. So if I had to step out, it didn't interrupt production. So that was a situation that, you know, I felt was best at the moment.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So what was it kind of like, kind of jumping from doing smaller shorts and kind of getting your feet wet, testing the waters? What was it like to sort of jump into your first feature? Was that a daunting prospect, or was it something you were like ready and able to do? Like, how did you feel about going into that?
Just like anything in every film, is always like a wave of emotions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Days you feel ready, days you feel unprepared, days you feel anxious, days you don't want to show up to set, you know? So it was literally those waves and emotions that I was pretty much going through the whole, you know, 11-12 day process.
Yeah.
You know, and just, you know, that taught me a lot. It taught the team a lot as well, because, you know, it was our film school per se. You know, we jumped into the fire. And we figured stuff out the way of the world. Like, because truthfully, that was on the cusp of COVID.
Yeah.
And, you know, pretty much I had cast, crew, like, quarantining in my house. And we lost our lead actress after day three.
Mm.
And it was one of those things. A lot of people think it was deliberate what we did with the actress switch. But that was literally like our lead actress was like, hey, I may have to go to Japan to do an audition. Can I, you know, can we pick up when I come back? And I was like, hey, once you leave this house, I don't think you're going to be coming back. So
yeah,
we had to like figure out stuff on the fly. We had a very great, you know, female lead replacement who jumped in and, you know, picked off where she left off.
Yeah. Yeah. You figured out a great way to kind of incorporate that into the story, it seems like. You know, maybe just to give listeners background, but without spoiling it at all, you know, do you want to kind of talk a little bit about what the film's about, kind of what genre and that kind of thing?
Yeah, so Biodeception is a psychological thriller. It's about a promising novelist that finds himself trapped in a terrifying reality as, you know, he tries to figure out that there's a murderer in his midst. And it's, you know, it's a very wild ride. A lot of things may seem intentionally, but they weren't. But we just roll with the punches, though.
Yeah.
You know, for the first one out, you know, like I said, as a lead producer, lead creative, and for it to land where it landed, I'm nothing but, you know, proud of that.
Yeah, yeah, and I think you should be. So, kind of going into it, did you, first of all, are you able to discuss the budget of the film at all?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's okay. Very common knowledge. We spent $20,000 on it.
Okay.
It was literally a conversation that, you know, I had with the wife. And it was like, hey, you know, what can we do? And we budgeted that amount. That's why I was like, hey, there's no reshoots and those pickup dates.
Gotcha.
The budget is 20. You know, we got to live and die with what we have.
Yeah.
That was that situation.
Okay, cool. So it sounds like that was just completely self-funded. Didn't raise any outside financing or crowdfunding or anything like that.
It was. So initially, I tried to do crowdfunding.
Yeah.
And day one, once it went live, it was like, oh, I got like $1,500. It was like $1,560. And then I looked at the name and it was like some guy that I never knew. And then I looked at the email address and it was like my wife. And I was like, oh, okay. So
she's trying to get things started.
Let's just try, you know, if this is what we're going to do, we might as well just like, you know, just go all in and just like self-fund it.
Gotcha.
We had a couple of people, you know, put, you know, $2,000 here, $2,000 there. But yeah, it was, you know, self-funded with me and a couple of other people.
Yeah. So going into it, were you giving a lot of thought to how you were going to release it, kind of what your target audience was going to be or anything like that? Or was it more just kind of jump in, make the film, and then kind of deal with all that stuff later?
It was pretty much, hey, let's just jump into the water. You know, like I told the lead actor, who's also like a producing partner in a production company, the intention isn't to make money from this. It's to make a feature and show that we can make a feature and make it look good.
Yeah.
And, you know, pretty much like go from there. So we weren't even thinking about distribution. It was just like, hey, let's just complete a feature film, because we did a couple of shorts beforehand. But, you know, in this day and age, it's hard to monetize shorts. And, you know, that romanticized story of doing a 10-20 minute short and then somebody falling in love with it and giving you millions, it's like we didn't have the luxury of that. So it was like, hey, let's go out and do a feature and see what happens from there.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense. And I think like for your first feature, being too focused on sort of the romantic dreams of getting discovered and picked up and, you know, all of this stuff, I think it's good to kind of put that aside and just don't pick up more than you can chew. Just pick up something that's kind of simple that uses resources that you have available, like you did with your, just using your house, self-funding, and just make a film, make a small, yes, low budget film. Don't have, you know, big, high expectations for it. And that shows people that you can make a film. And then after that, if, you know, if you want to step it up a notch, you know, hopefully you can. And I think that's a great way to go about doing it. So just, you know, we'll get to kind of finishing the film and putting it out there and seeing how that all went in a minute. But I just, you know, since we're kind of talking about production of it, are there any stories you want to tell about the production of the film that are interesting or cool or, you know?
It was chaotic.
Yeah, it always is. How many days did you shoot, if I can ask?
So we had 12 days.
Yeah.
But we literally shot, like I said, 11 days, because the first 3 days after that, we took day 4 to kind of regroup and figure out like, hey, what we were going to do, because
right,
it was like all was lost. Like, what are we going to do without like the female lead? But it was a lot of that, you know, what COVID was that nobody knew at the time. We had a lot of people drop out the day before or the day of. So, you know, I'm on backstage at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, like, hey, can you make it to this location? Hey, can you come through?
Wow.
You know? So it was kind of like we did everything that we had to do to complete the film, but it was a wild ride.
Yeah.
I can only imagine what, like, you know, cast and crew was thinking.
Yep.
But I think, you know, filmmaking is just all about being adaptable, you know, and rolling with the punches. And, you know, I think my life is a little chaotic how I live it.
Yeah.
So I didn't really like fluster under that moment. It was kind of like with filmmaking, I like to say, like, you know, what can go wrong will go wrong. So just being prepared, you know,
totally,
in the moment, like figuring it out.
Yeah, that's great. So when did you actually finish shooting it?
We began March 2020.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right when it hit. Wow. Yep.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, so we still finished up in March. But I didn't really take a look at the footage until like the summertime.
Yeah, that makes sense. I shot 3 horror shorts last summer and it took me a while to like, yeah, it was such a hard thing to make those shorts in such a short period of time, like over 2 months while I was working a day job, that like, once I got done, I went into a little bit of depression. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't look at the footage. I couldn't, you know, I needed to take some time and just like get my bearings, you know, before I went back into it. So totally understand that, you know.
I get it. Like, I'm glad you brought it up, because I think when it comes to filmmaking, like, mental health is something that isn't spoken about a lot.
Yeah.
And just going through that time, I was feeling like things that I never felt before and I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, wait, so this is like anxiety. Like, this is always like a hiding sense of like worry. And it's like, what is going on with me? You know, like, I think, you know, I didn't know what to think at the moment. So it was like, you know, taking that, you know, time to decompress, taking that time to like, you know, take the weight off my shoulders of like trying to make the perfect film, because it's not going to happen. You know, I think, you know, filmmakers just have to like do that in general, like just take that pressure off of us, because quote unquote, like my background of like, you know, working for, you know, these media companies, like I thought I had to come out the gate with, you know, the next thing. Like I said, I wasn't looking to be rich off of this film, but I wanted something to be impactful. I wanted it to be wow. And I put unrealistic, you know, expectations, you know, on this film, working with a $20,000 budget. But I'm comparing myself, you know, to Hollywood that have like 20 million.
Yep.
And I don't really think that, one, that's not fair to the team. And it wasn't fair to like me, you know, at the moment. And I just learned to like live with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's like a really great and kind of humble way of looking at it. So you got done with the production, you took a little break. Then how long did it actually take you to finish film in post?
I actually like passed that on. We had a great editor based in Florida. She did a marvelous job, because, you know, when you're so attached to the work, what's on screen wasn't the story that, you know, I wanted to tell. Like, we had to, you know, switch things. We had to adapt. So what ended up being what Bi Deception is not the script.
Yeah.
So at first I was just like angry and I was upset and it was just like, this isn't the movie I wanted to make. And that's where that, you know, the doubt and, you know, labeling myself as a failure. So I had to step away from it. So one, I couldn't edit it. We had First Sue Alexandra come in. She did a great cut. And from there, she probably took like a month or two to knock out that cut. And then we had the, you know, score, and then it was like sound design. And it's a funny story. Like after that first cut with no music, we actually got a distribution deal.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, it was one of those things where, you know, people were just reaching out. Oh, hey, we see it on, I'm sure they've seen it on IMDb, and you get the random, you know, unsolicited distributors reaching out.
Right. Right. But at this point, nothing's actually, sorry to interrupt, but at this point, nothing's released, right? There's nothing.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Nothing's released. It's just literally that first rough cut.
Yeah.
And, you know, being a novice in the distribution process, it's just like, here, yeah, go ahead, you know, watch it. You know, if you have a film eye, you may see potential in it.
Right.
You know, go run with it. And then we had a company that said, hey, yeah, we would love to take it. And, you know, as a filmmaker, when somebody tells you they want to like acquire something that you're not too proud of, it's like, oh, hey, send me the paperwork.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and the, you know, because I told them, I was like, hey, I'm not trying to make money off this film. That's not my intention. My intention is to set this up to do the next film. And they were like, oh, wow, you did it for this amount. So we would love to work with you for the next film.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, yeah, you know, here, take it. And that was just like the worst mistake that I made.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right. So we got lots to unpack now. I mean, I'm sorry to laugh at your, you know, at the unfortunate story, but that's, you know, I'm always interested in different stories about distribution experiences, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So it just, yeah, fascinated to kind of get in and hear what that story was. It really is kind of, it's sort of amazing that you just at a rough cut stage, you got this interest and, you know, already had a distributor interested in it. So, you know, what happened with the post-production after that? Did they kind of help finance any of the post-production or did you just kind of keep going? Like what happened? Or did you just kind of sign a deal and sign it over to them? Like what happened after all that?
So I signed the contract and everything that they promised, they didn't deliver.
Didn't deliver. Okay.
You know, and yeah. It was like, hey, so do you guys want to take it over from here? And they were like, you know, you like, I don't want to say typical distribution deals because everything is different.
Yeah.
But, you know, typically it's like if they take it over and finish it up, they'll just like tax that, you know, price on to, you know. But they were, you know, inquiring, well, like, what's your budget? You know, like how much do you have? Because we have a post production house. I'm like, wait a minute. Like, that's, you know, like you're trying to make money off of. So either you believe in this project or you don't. You know, but it seems like you're looking to get money from me. And it was like money that I didn't have. And the good thing about that contract was like, you know, I had to submit those deliverables by a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, you know, after they I had that bad taste in my mouth. I was like, I'm just not going to, you know, deliver these assets. And I'm just going to, you know, you pretty much go into fault on the contract myself. So that bad experience taught me so much on what to look for, how to operate, and how to move forward.
Yeah, totally. And I want to get into all that stuff, but I still want to kind of try to put together the timeline a little bit here. So you gave them a rough cut, and then they, like, it sounds like they just came back to you with a distribution deal, what looked like a deal at the time. Probably in the end, it wasn't much of a deal, but looked like a deal at the time. And you just kind of signed right then and there. Was there any kind of back and forth? Did you consult an attorney, anything like that?
I didn't consult an attorney. The back and forth was, you know, more so like figuring out just like next steps. You know, like I said, it was a situation where I felt fairly comfortable with the rep, you know, and it was one of those situations where I want to build, you know, I want to build with companies. So the all the interactions up until signing the contract, because I did drag my feet on actually signing.
Mm-hmm.
Once I signed, then it was just like crickets. until it was time to ask for like money for more.
Right. Okay. So when you signed, you didn't have anything. You weren't delivering anything to them at that time.
No.
You just signed the deal, and their expectation was that you were going to go back and finish the movie and then deliver it to them.
Correct.
And so when you say crickets, like what were you expecting from them at that point?
We spoke about them putting us in, you know, contact with their production house.
Post-production
house.
Right.
And then I found out that there was an upfront charge in that. So I was like, we'll take over from it. And then it was like, hey, I do have another project that, you know, I'm about to also go into production, you know, maybe 6 months down the line. You guys said that you wanted to get involved early on in the process. This is what it is.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, yeah, so what's your budget? Like, we can help you film. And it was just like, oh, like, so you're more of a, like, a production services company.
Yeah, yeah, I see. Okay. Now I get, when you said earlier, when you said they were asking your budget, I thought you meant they were asking your budget about By Deception, the film that you'd already made, but you meant that they were asking the budget for the next film you wanted to make, and they were looking for you to give money to them to make that movie, basically, something like that.
Right. Yeah. So they were asking the budget for to finish up By Deception, like what I wanted to spend with them to finish it up.
Yeah.
And then just certain conversations that we had as far as like the distribution, I guess, like game plan, it was something that I wasn't okay with. It was like, you know, press up DVDs to put into Walmart. It was theatrical. And, you know, at that time, I wasn't happy with what the film was. And I felt that I would be taking money away from people that would possibly be watching this.
Yeah.
So it was like, what do you mean? Like, you know, DVDs and Walmart and theater. And it was like, nah, this is not that kind of film. Like, I don't feel comfortable like promoting, because, you know, at that time, like, I hated the film. It was just something that I could not feel good going out and say, hey, go watch By Deception and pay $19.99 for a DVD, or go pay, you know, $15 at the theater. And then so that just left a sour taste in my mouth. And it was just like, yeah, I can't proceed with you guys.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah. So then back to kind of what you did about the contract. In the end, you just kind of didn't deliver what you said you were going to deliver. And again, I'm not trying to guilt you for that. It sounds like that was kind of the right decision in the circumstance, but did they ever come after you for that? Or was it just silence?
No, it was silence. And I even sent out, you know, I CC'd the CEO of the company.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey guys, like, I'm not moving forward with you, you know, consider me, you know, in default, and, you know, and still nothing from there. So it was like, oh, you guys really don't care anyway.
Yeah. So I think it's fair to say, and correct me if you don't think this is fair, but I think it's fair to say that you basically ended up running into a predatory distributor, a distributor that was kind of looking to benefit from the work that you had done and the money that you might be willing to spend to continue, you know, with that work, but money that was going to go to them, not kind of go back to you. And they weren't really actually that interested in distributing the film on their own, or taking, you know, kind of their own risk or their own interest in it. Would you say that that's fair?
Oh, that's more than fair. You know, I feel filmmaking is an art of passion. And, you know, sometimes people can get lost and be so passionate about a product that, you know, you're blind to like what's actually happening. You know, it's just so happens. I just didn't have the money to pay them at the time.
Yeah.
So, you know,
well, it's good that you didn't because you shouldn't have. Right. Like, even if you did, it probably wouldn't have been money you'd ever see back. So, yeah. Yeah. Wow. OK. It's a very poignant story, I think, and a good one for listeners to hear so that they can avoid, you know, similar situations like that. I think it's like, you got to watch out for these distributors that are sort of promising you the moon or like express this like enthusiastic interest in your film. And it sounds like at the time you weren't happy with your film. So the, you know, enthusiastic interest was probably like, to a certain extent, you were probably like, why are you interested in this film? I don't even like it, you know?
Yeah.
Are you, so I'm going to ask you the $1 million question here is, are you able to name who the distributor was, or do you want to keep that close to the vest?
Oh, I'm super transparent, you know.
Yeah.
The company name is Green Apple Entertainment. You know, that was, and my brother's actually sitting next to me and he's laughing at the fact that I'm named.
Yeah.
You know, if you come to me, I'm gonna name names and not for controversy. It's literally to, you know, make sure that, you know, another filmmaker isn't taken advantage of.
Right.
Because a portion of that, I reached out to multiple like filmmakers that was like that got their film distributed by them. And, you know, they were telling me like horror stories. Like, in fact, one filmmaker was like, hey, I'm starting my own streaming network. Like, how about you give me your film? Yeah. So, and I went back to them and said, like, hey, I'm not going to tell you who, but it's not, I'm not hearing good things about how you guys do work. And that's when crickets like started, you know, occurring.
Yeah. Okay. So what happened after that? Like, did you kind of pick up the pieces on your own and finish the movie on your own?
Yeah.
And, okay.
It was one of those things where, you know, like I said, I'm glad that I went through that because it taught me so much about the distribution process. And I'm doing research and I'm just like seeing how other companies roll out their film. So we finally got it completed. And then, you know, I cut a trailer and the trailer is kind of like what took off, like had things like take off.
Yeah.
And, you know, so pushing that out there a little bit more, which is actually funny because the first teaser trailer that we still have on YouTube, it still has like Green Apple Entertainment in the beginning. That's just because I didn't like take it down just because it accumulated like a nice amount of views. So I'm like, hey,
this
is what it is.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, that trailer, like people, like it was interest.
Yeah.
And then I learned, like, I'm not saying I'm out here to make bad films because I'm not, but it's also not my job to like a film. It's my job to market and promote it.
Sure.
And that's one of the things that I learned. Like, you know, I have to take off like the writer hat or the creative and be a producer. Because if you look at the majors, they trick us all the time with their trailers.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, hey, like, how can I make this like the most marketable trailer to, you know, bring about more interest and go from there?
Yeah, makes sense. So can I ask, like, are you happy with the film now that it's kind of been cut different, maybe cut differently, maybe been fine-tuned a little bit more since that initial cut, things like that? What's your feeling on it?
I'm happy with what it is and what we had to make it. You know, like I said, it was just unrealistic expectations. And I feel like anytime you make a film and it's not exactly that vision, which it would probably never will be, you know, that's where, you know, the anger or, you know, the disgust. But we dealt with situations that was not in our control.
Yeah.
So it was one of those things where, you know, it's that pipe dream of, oh, like, what if it was actually what I wanted? And, you know, where could it have been after that? But, you know, it's like you can drive yourself crazy from that perspective.
Totally. So, and yeah, I really appreciate you sharing your sort of like emotional honesty about it and how you feel about it and how, you know, you're sort of aware that maybe it didn't come out as well as you'd hoped or as well as you wanted, but that's okay. You're okay with that. You're okay with sort of taking it for what it is and moving on and hopefully like bringing, you know, a bunch of experiences onto the next project and just, you know, entering into that cycle of just continuing to try to improve, which I think is really what filmmakers need to be able to do. You know, they need to be able to just kind of pick themselves up and learn and go on to the next project and pick themselves up again and learn, go on to the next project and, you know, indefinitely, as long as they can, as long as they can sustain it themselves and not go insane in the process, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, just really appreciate the kind of emotional honesty that you bring to that process. So did you ever make any efforts to like kind of get into film festivals or anything like that?
No, you know, just because the thing with film festivals, it's once you, because what it was released in like 2022, but it's like, once you go through that long, daunting process and it's just like emotionally draining.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, this is like, I'm not going to do the route and then be drained, you know, again.
Yeah. 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 It's like another year of your life that you just spend like, you know, even good films, really good films getting rejected most of the time, you know, and, you know, holding out for those few acceptances. And, you know, sometimes they're not festivals that are all that great or interesting. And it's just, yeah, it's a hard, it's a hard process to go through. So I don't blame you for not putting yourself through that. So then so you released it. How did you release it? Did you go to Film Hub, anything like that? Or like what?
So we did get another distributor, Homestead Entertainment.
Interesting. Okay. How did you find them?
They actually reached out to us.
Okay.
But I think it was like via like another filmmaker friend. But I got, you know, an email and, you know, I sent over the trailer and then I got a phone call like, you know, right away.
Oh,
and then
nice.
Once again, it was one of those, oh, we love it. We did it. Telling you everything that you need to hear as a filmmaker for you to feel love. I think that's the crazy part of film. You know, as filmmakers, we just want to feel accepted and we want to be told our work is good, even if, you know, it's not what we envision. As long as somebody likes it and wants it, you know, it was something.
Yeah.
But yeah, they did what they needed to do. They took it to a couple of places. And then, yeah, it landed where it landed. Then I'm not going to say I'm happy with what they did, but it was also one of those, once you hand over a product or all your deliverables and assets and on to the next, you know, everything that was promised, you know, it wasn't delivered. But, you know, it's like, I believe like what you say is what you should do, you know?
Yeah.
That was the biggest thing.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I'm curious now, like you were approached by them, having gone through this other not so great experience with the previous distribution company. How did you take what you'd learned from the previous company into kind of negotiating with this company? Did it change your perspective at all? Did you, you know, were you much more cautious? Like, how did that go?
I was much more cautious. You know, the biggest thing was they were also coming with, you know, individual in Dame Dash Studios. And in, you know, the hip hop world, you know, that's a pretty big name.
Okay.
And I just looked at it like worst case scenario, that's, you know, a marketing push that even if they don't do anything with it, I know I can do something with it.
Okay. Yeah.
It was one of those things where at this time it's like, yeah, I hear what you guys are saying, but, you know, I just need the film out. I'll handle marketing and promotion if I need to, you know, and I even, it took a little bit for them to release it. And then I sent like, you know, I don't say a threat in an email, but I was like, look, if you're not going to release the film, let me know because I could get this on platforms too via Film Hub. So, you know, that was like a two-tiered situation. You know, they were able to get it on Peacock and Tubi, and then through Film Hub, it's on like Redbox, Ling TV, et cetera, et cetera.
Nice. Okay. So you kind of hinted that you're maybe not entirely happy with them. Like, can you talk a little bit more about that or talk about what they have done well, what they maybe haven't done well? Like, what's your overall experience been like with them?
Well, the film, you know, like I said, it debuted on Peacock. And, you know, when we started, you know, we couldn't have fathomed, you know, that it would be, I don't think Peacock was around at that time, but that was like the streaming boom.
Yep.
And to land as a debut on like, you know, a Steam platform, it was just like, it was a dream come true. And then you hear great things about Tubi at the time, like, you know, other filmmakers saying they were making a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I think that was my anxiousness. It's like, hey, like, I want to get this out there because I want to make money, you know? And I think that was also my frustration with them because it was like, I know what you guys are doing. Like, you're waiting for this to be like on Peacock first before you put it on Tubi, but just release it on Tubi so, you know, we can get this stuff like going.
Get rolling, yeah.
And then, you know, I got an email that said that we were going to be released in the summertime. So I'm starting my promotion. They gave me a date. I'm starting my promotion. I'm promoting.
Yeah.
That day comes and nothing. It's not
on. Was this last year or was this 2022 or 2023?
2022. So July 2022, it said it was going to be out and it wasn't.
Yeah.
So now, you know, it's like you do that promotion.
Oh, man.
Like,
yeah.
It's, you know, silence. And then I think that's when like depression, anxiety started kicking in.
Oh, God. Yeah.
You tell everybody and then it's not out. Now you're looking at as a filmmaker that's lying about, you know, your deals. And that's kind of like when I started like pushing, you know, I uploaded everything into Film Hub and I said, look, guys, I just need to know what it is. If I don't get it, then don't worry. Like I'll do what I have to.
Yeah.
And then they gave me a date and it actually premiered before then because I was checking like Peacock and Tubi daily. Like,
yeah, I'm
literally,
sure.
Like, every day, like a madman. And then when it finally, you know, premiered, it was just like a sigh of release. Like, one, you know, everybody that I told where this was going to be, this is where it's at. And then, you know, as a filmmaker, it's cool, like clicking on Peacock and seeing your film up there. So
yeah, definitely.
But yeah, it was a wild ride.
Wow. Yeah. Sounds like, I don't know. We're like in the middle of that, were you kind of like, oh boy, here we go again. Like what, who did I sign with and why did I sign yeah.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And when I say like I wrote emails and, you know, the frustration was let loose and I, you know, it's one of those things was just like, you know, you're looking like one, you're fraud. And then on top of that, it's like also, so am I even cut out for this industry? Like, why am I making films if, you know, I can't, you know, it's not even about like making money. It's just like about being somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Just getting it out there and having kind of the satisfaction of people watching it, you know, or people watching it, people enjoying it, people getting something out of it. Like if you can't even get to that point, I can imagine that it's just really frustrating.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But like I said, those two experiences, it taught me that, you know, as a filmmaker, you can't wait or you can't depend on whoever, whatever they say. You know, yeah. You still have to go out there and learn this business mm-hmm. because it's a business first mm-hmm. and then figure out, you know, what works for you.
Yeah.
And it was a crash course, but I'm glad I went through the fire.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. I mean, I think just trying to put a positive spin on it and just be aware of the lessons that you learned and the experience that you take into your next project, I think is, you know, just being able to view that in a positive light, I think is what will keep you going. You know, if you can't do that, then you're just going to give up because it's too hard. So, yeah. So it finally got out and, you know, it's out there now. People can watch it. Are you seeing any returns on it? Like how's it doing?
Oh, yeah. It's doing really well.
Oh, nice.
The response that we're getting is like more than, you know, gracious. Like I said, I sit down and I'm like, maybe we're too hard on ourselves, you know, like people, one, they thought the switch was intentional.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We got placed in an IndieWire article, which was like really cool.
Yeah.
I've constantly have like filmmakers reaching out and telling, you know, me how, you know, they like it.
Mm-hmm.
I stop telling people that I hate the film, you know.
That's a great step, right?
Because, you know, I almost felt the urge to tell you when you were like, oh, hey, I watched it. And I was about to say, I hate it. But, you know, I'm past that portion of it now.
Yeah.
Like it's closure.
Yeah, totally.
And yeah, like, you know, and the biggest thing is what we set out to do, it gave us the opportunity to do because we made that film with the intention of making other films after it. That's all we wanted. You know, that's all I want to do. I want to make films so I can make more films. And since that, we probably did like 4 features and we had like an insane month of shooting a feature in December 2022, January 2023, and then, you know, February 2023, something that would not, you know, advise anybody to do. Like I said, it was mad.
Yeah.
But, you know, we rolled off our aha and we, you know, just kept it going.
Okay. Oh, I didn't realize that there was that sort of progression of the story. I was sort of focused on By Deception and kind of the whole story of that. But I didn't realize that you rolled from that into making what you said, 4 more features after that.
Yeah.
So, wow, that's a crazy story. And the fact that I guess it gave you the confidence and kind of experience and, you know, motivation to move on and jump into that craziness, it sounds great. Sounds admirable. So, I mean, what can you tell us about that experience and what you're, you know, with those features? Are those features, any of them done or any of them released?
All of them are in like post-production. One of them, just like produced from afar. That's out as well.
Okay.
It's on Tubi and Amazon. And it's, like I said, it's we're just getting it to like where it needs to be, just because, like I said, like I learned what initially needed to be done on how to, like, you know, market a film and the post-production process. Because, you know, like I said, when it's your first time around and, you know, somebody tells you deliverables,
yeah,
you're like, and in the indie world, it's like, oh yeah, you know, one person does 10 jobs. But I see why there's a lot of people on major films, because that deliverables, even on the indie perspective, is crazy. But then the next level, it's like insane and it can drive you mad.
Yeah.
So one of those films, we're definitely going to go the film festival route.
Nice.
Another one, we're just going to like mostly just like push to Tubi. And then, you know, we may pitch to another like streamers from there. Because like I said, with Bi-Deception, it taught me the business. So I made connections. I'm talking to like execs at Peacock. I'm having like pitch meetings with like bigger companies. And that was another thing. It was like, we're talking to like big time production companies to partner mm-hmm. up. It's mm-hmm. like, hey, like our budget was like $20,000 for a film. And, you know, their budget, their lowest budget is like $3.5 million.
Wow.
So okay. It's one of those things of, would you trust, you know, a production company with $3 million when they only handle? So it's kind of like we still have to show and prove. We still got to get stuff out to the market. And we want to make sure like we're doing it like the right way. And, you know, just keep it going from there.
Yeah, totally. So these other features that you made, were they kind of a step up budget wise, or were they kind of about the same? Like, where did they land on that scale?
No, it was kind of the same. We did a home invasion thriller that was $20,000. We did a romance drama that was $8,000. Mm-hmm. And then we did like another drama that was probably north of, let's say, like $50,000.
Yeah, okay. That's a little bit of a step up there. So, yeah.
And the good thing, it didn't have to come out of, you know, the family bank account.
So. Right. Yeah. So where did you raise funds for that, if you can say?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, that was just from other people seeing what happened with Bi-Deception and saying, hey, I want to make a film with you guys. Like,
gotcha.
Can you
okay.
be the production company?
Right. Great. Yeah. So it really sounds like the experience of Bi-Deception really just led to some really great opportunities to kind of build forward momentum on your career and on the kinds of, you know, on the projects that you make and the connections you made and all of that. So it sounds like in the end, it was a really positive, even though it was kind of a negative experience all along, it kind of turned into a positive experience in the end is what it sounds like. And as we were kind of going through it and kind of talking through all this stuff, I didn't really realize how much of that had come out of it, you know, so that's really great to hear.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things where when it comes to filmmaking, you have to keep going because I could have easily just, you know, packed up the bags and said, like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
You know? But then it's also that craziness inside of, you know, yourself that's like, hey, I can make it in this industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to keep on going. And, you know, it's going to be some hard and trying times, but nothing in life is easy, right?
Yeah, totally. Right. Especially filmmaking.
Oh.
That's like those who pick filmmaking are kind of picking like, you know, there's probably a few things, you know, raising a child and a few other things that are maybe harder, but you pick filmmaking, you're definitely not making it easy on yourself. You know, there's got to be something great about doing it, you know, that you go through all of this to do it, you know, and like I sometimes question my own sanity for doing it, you know, because it's so hard. Go ahead.
Isn't it? Because it's, if you think about it, it's like, we say, oh, we want to make a film. So we start making a film. And then during the process, we get so frustrated. And then we say, oh, I don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
Why am I? And then you do the process all over again. It's like the whole circle. Like, yep, I want to do it. I don't want to do it. And then, you know, you just keep on going. So, but that's where that, you know, it shows that the ones that do this, they must love it and they believe in themselves because it's a crazy roller coaster.
Yeah, totally. Kind of looking forward, like I know you've got these projects that you're kind of overseeing, finishing up and releasing. Is there anything else kind of on your plate looking forward? You kind of looking at a doing another film anytime soon? Anything like that?
Yeah, we're definitely looking. You know, like I said, the process taught me so much from a production standpoint, from a distributor standpoint. So we're throwing our hat all across everything. You know, it's. You know, distributing our own content, like building those relationships with streamers themselves, launching a streaming company just to figure out how that goes and, you know, be, you know, that platform, you know, filmmaking for filmmakers. So, yeah, like I said, it's just learning how this business works and seeing, you know, where we can survive in it and, you know, figuring out like what works for us and how we can help others during that process.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, I mean, we covered a lot of stuff in this talk. about your experiences, about what you learned, but is there anything that we kind of maybe didn't cover or anything you want to add to your experiences in terms of what you learned, in terms of what listeners can take away from this and apply to their own experiences, anything like that?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing is you have to, learning is the big thing.
Yep.
You know, you're, as a filmmaker, even when you think your job is done, it's not done. You know, just because you make a film, there's another process. And once that film is released, then it's still another process. And then you have to figure out what kind of filmmaker you are, you know. And I learned that, you know, to succeed in this industry, you have to be a little bit of everything. And you have to be your own publicist. You have to be in marketing. You know, you have to like push, you have to network. And that's the only way that, you know, you can really survive in this industry. But the biggest thing is you have to keep going. You know, it's easy to quit. And I'm not saying like everybody should, you know, do this, because there has to be a level of insanity to keep on going.
Yep.
But, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, you have to find people that you can build with that can keep you grounded, but also keep you motivated.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, those are some great and wise and inspiring words. So appreciate kind of coming to that conclusion after quite an experience that you went through to get there. Where can people follow you or get in touch with you? Anything like that? Anything you want to plug? And I'll put them in the show notes, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm not really like a self-promoter, but
yeah.
You can follow the company on Instagram. It's Deck of Cards Media. That's probably like where we're the most active at. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see other news and it'll point you in the right direction. You follow us on Instagram.
Okay. Makes sense. Anything else to add?
No, that's pretty much it. You know, right. One, I do want to say thank you so much. You know, I feel like there are, you know, filmmakers and podcasters like you that give, you know, people like us the chance to share our stories. So, you know, we can, you know, offer value in the filmmaking community. So thank you for what you do.
Sure. Thank you.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. It's great to hear the appreciation. It's, you know, it's not nowhere near as hard or, you know, challenging as making films, but doing a podcast does take a little bit of effort and a little bit of time. And it's great when I hear some, you know, some feedback that people are getting something out of it. So, yeah. But, you know, again, I owe most everything to the guests that come on and hearing their stories and really appreciate the story that you gave us today. I think there's a lot to take from it that will be of value to listeners. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you for allowing me to share. You know, I'm in a better space now. So
I know,
you
know, it's great to hear.
One felt good. I felt before, I was, it was kind of a vengeance tour and
yeah,
I'm happy now.
Yeah. You know? That's great to hear.
I'm in a better space.
All right. That's all for today. Thanks everybody for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please do rate and or review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. That is the best way that you can help me grow the show and reach a wider audience of independent filmmakers and others who just want to try to understand this crazy, crazy world of independent film distribution. As always, feel free to contact me directly with any feedback or suggestions for the show. You can find me on Twitter, or should I say X, or Instagram at DarkRoseColin, or you can email me at Colin@DarkRosePictures.com. That's Colin with one L, C-O-L-I-N, @DarkRosePictures.com. And by the way, DarkRosePictures.com is my website for my feature and other projects. Its purpose is not just to promote my films, but to tell the story with honesty and transparency of my own personal filmmaking journey. So if you want to follow the process of an independent filmmaker from development to distribution, this is a great way to do that. So check it out, DarkRosePictures.com. Anyway, my thanks to Samuel Calvin Morrison for sharing his very relevant and important story. More thanks to Jeff Freimut for his continuing editing work, keeping up the pace week after week to bring you this solid line of interviews. I've got more great guests lined up in the coming weeks talking all things indie distribution. So please do stay tuned, keep getting those movies out there into the world, and thank you so much for listening.